This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Local observers won't release their finding until after polls close, but at midday, representative of local observer missions told VOA they hadn't encountered any significant issues and that the voting appeared to be progressing smoothly.
That's Zach Badoff reporting for VOA from polling stations in Rwanda's capital. We'll have full details on the country's election coming up. Also, Kenya's appeals court dismisses a lawsuit that would have forced the Electoral Commission to only use an electronic voter identification system on Election Day. The international community is appealing to Kenyans to hold a peaceful election, and Ethiopia's parliament lifts the state of emergency it enacted last year. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the polls are closed in Rwanda and the votes are being counted in today's presidential election. Incumbent Paul Kagame is expected to easily win a third term. The Electoral Commission reports a good voter turnout. Reporter Zach Badoff visited a number of polling stations earlier today and files this report from Kigali.
As polls opened at a school about an hour outside Kigali, election staff explained how to properly cast a ballot for president. The voting was calm as voters slowly trickled into the school and found their polling rooms in the school, nestled in the hilly outskirts of the sprawling capital city. Voter Joseph Zorondera says there is good organization here. It's like a celebration, like a wedding. Very well organized. The East African community has international observers monitoring the polls, while the European Union decided not to send a team of observers. Local observers won't release their finding until after polls close, but at midday, representative of local observer missions told VOA they hadn't encountered any significant issues and that the voting appeared to be progressing smoothly. President Paul Kagame faces two challengers in his bid for a third term. Voter Joseph Zorondera said he voted for the incumbent. He says, "We need a good leader in our country now to continue to secure the country, to help the people of Rwanda, and to continue to develop the country for the next 7 years." 9 of the 11 political parties permitted to register in Rwanda have endorsed Kagame. His two opponents are Green Party candidate Frank Habineza and independent Philippe Mpayimana. 4 other presidential hopefuls were disqualified by the Electoral Commission. The government and ruling party have brushed off allegations from human rights groups that authorities have worked to intimidate and stifle political opposition. At the polls in Mbandazi, in the outskirts of Kigali, Charles Ndamage is voting for Habineza.
I chose this party simply because of it's a good platform. So the manifesto presented by Habineza so was very interesting to me. For instance, the fact that he wants to develop the country by reducing the step between rich people and poor people.
Kagame has been in power for 17 years. He's widely credited with stabilizing the country after the 1994 genocide. A 2015 constitutional referendum, approved by 98% of voters, allows him to potentially remain in power until 2034. Some Kagame supporters VOA met at the polls Friday said they expect the president to step down after a third term. For now, though, voter Imelda Batamoliza says she doesn't see another option on the ballot.
Yeah, they're good, but I don't think any of them is going to do better than Paul Kagame, because we have seen, like, for the past few years that he has been on, the changes, it's really a big change. Like, it's like obvious.
The Electoral Commission is expected to release official results over the weekend. Zach Badorf for VOA News, Kigali.
Kenya's appeals court has dismissed a lawsuit that would have forced the Electoral Commission to only use an electronic voter identification system on Election Day. The decision upholds an earlier ruling by the High Court. However, the court ordered the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission to use a voter ID card if the biometric system fails to identify a person. The decision supports a memo issued by Commission CEO Ezra Chiloba. Critics say a manual backup plan could lead to vote rigging. Biometrics can use such things as fingerprints, iris, or faces to identify a person. Meanwhile, the United States, Britain, and other European nations have appealed to Kenyans to hold a peaceful general election next week. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Recent events in Kenya, including the murder of a top official with the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, IEBC, are creating a cloud of fear ahead of Tuesday's polls. Robert Godek is the U.S. ambassador to Kenya.
Obviously, the horrific murder that happened just a few days ago of IEBC official Chris and also the person who was with him, a young woman. You know, we condemn these murders unequivocally, and it's important that the IEBC staff be protected, and we look forward to the government's commitment to that. We welcome the government's commitment to doing that.
He called on the security agencies to speed investigations into the matter, noting that the U.S. would be willing to provide assistance if needed. Chris Msando, who was in charge of the electronic voting system at the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, IEBC, was found murdered 3 days after his family reported him missing to the police. Godek says next week's elections are vital to Kenya's democratic process.
Next week, the people of Kenya will choose their leaders going forward for the next 5 years. It's an opportunity to reaffirm the promise of the 2010 Constitution and to make a powerful statement about the commitment of the Kenyan people to democracy, to prosperity, to security for their country. I think that this is a time for all Kenyans to come together. Really, all parts of society have to be part of making this election a success. Making this election free, fair, credible, and peaceful. Obviously, the IEBC has a key role to play, and you know, I would encourage Kenyans to give them the space they need to do their work. I commend them on the progress that they've made in recent weeks and months, and I look forward to seeing a successful election next week.
Nick Haley, the British High Commissioner to Kenya, urged Kenyans to uphold peace, law and order during the election period.
We must all reject violence in this election and reject words which may inspire violence. We must speak of what unites us as brothers and sisters and hold to account those who seek to divide us or provoke hatred. We must support and pray for those working to keep this election safe, for those observing these polls to help make them free and fair, for the media, who play a role in informing us and helping us reflect on the choices we make.
According to the London-based Amnesty International, Kenya's Information, Communication and Technology Cabinet Secretary, Joe Mucheru, has threatened to revoke media houses' licenses if they broadcast live the results announced by the Electoral Commission. Some 20 million Kenyans are registered to vote in the August 8 polls. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is running for a second term against 7 opponents, most prominently former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. It was Odinga's loss in the disputed 2007 election that set off weeks of political and ethnic violence across Kenya, leaving more than 1,100 people dead. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
If Ethiopia's parliament has lifted the state of emergency it enacted late last year. Emergency rule was imposed in October after a development program for Addis Ababa sparked unrest. It later turned into large anti-government demonstrations about politics and human rights abuses. Meeting in special session, Ethiopia's parliament ended the state of emergency after the defense minister presented a report saying the country's peace and security situation has improved. More than 600 people were killed in the unrest and more than 21,000 arrested. The defense minister says 8,000 people are still in jail, accused of crimes committed during the violence. A new UN report accuses the government in the DRC of instigating ethnic-based massacres in the diamond-rich Kasai province. These findings are based on interviews with 96 people who have fled to neighboring Angola to escape violence in Kasai's Kamonia territory. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UN Human Rights Office in Geneva.
A UN investigative team was deployed to Angola for several days in June after the government of President Joseph Kabila rejected a call by the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights for a credible, transparent investigation into the Kasai crisis involving the Kamuina Insapu militia. The chief of the High Commissioner's Central and West Africa section, Scott Campbell, says investigators heard tales of atrocities on a massive scale. He says many of the people interviewed bore visible traces of violent abuse, including amputated limbs, scars, mutilations, and horrible disfigurement from machetes.
Over a three-month period between March and June of this year, what our team found was that at least 251 people were killed in a fairly limited part of the Kasai region of the Kamonia territory, including a large number of children, 62 children killed amongst the 251 that our team was able to document. Many of them were under 8 years old.
Witnesses say they increasingly are being targeted because of their ethnic group. Campbell warns ethnic cleansing, possibly on a large scale, appears to be taking place. He tells VOA investigators have received credible evidence about the government's complicity in these acts.
We've noted, and what we think is very important, is that the testimonies that we've gotten, we find, are very credible and point to a nature and a scale of acts that could amount to crimes against humanity.
Campbell says the Kamuina Insapu militia instigated a rebellion against the state following the killing last year of their traditional chief by Congolese forces. He says the militia also has committed many serious crimes, including targeted killings, and it uses boys and girls as young as seven as fighters against the state. He says these could constitute crimes against humanity. Campbell tells VOA he fears the chaos, disruption, and insecurity in the Kasais could be used as an excuse for postponing elections that are supposed to be held this year. He says our concern is that this could be manipulated for a postponement of elections, which could then lead to further human rights violations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Committee to Protect Journalists says authorities in the DRC are harassing and detaining journalists. It says journalists should be allowed to cover protests and other events of public interest without interference. Press freedom advocates say security forces harassed, beat, or detained 18 journalists across the country on July 31st as they covered anti-government protests. They say while the journalists were released, security forces delayed many of their photographs and recordings. CPJ says the actions taken against journalists are a crude attempt at censoring news of protests and sends a chilling message to the press in the DRC. International crisis group says Libya's southwest region of Fezzan has become the main gateway for sub-Saharan African migrants traveling to Europe. A new ICG report calls on the European community to have a united front to deal with the problem. Claudia Gazzini is senior Libya analyst at the International Crisis Group. She spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the root causes of the migrant flow.
Southern Libya has always been an important entry point for migrants and refugees traveling to the coasts of North Africa and from there to Europe. But over the past year and a half, flows have concentrated on the border between Niger and Libya. This used to be just one of the various entry points of migrants, but since Algeria has closed its borders for security reasons, no refugees and migrants enter through the Algerian border, at least very few. And also since Chad has declared military operations in the northern part of the country, it's very difficult for migrants to cross into Libya from Chad. And this has meant that most of the flows have gone through the Niger-Libya border, more specifically the border area between Madama in northern Niger to Mogadishu in southern Libya. This border remains wide open, with authorities in northern Niger sometimes colluding with the traffickers, and also the situation in the southwest of Libya allowing the flow of migrants, meaning in southwestern Libya, the illegal economy is triumphant, there's very little state control and presence of security forces, so it's very easy for more than 100,000 people to cross this border every year.
What are the major findings of the International Crisis Group's report on migration from Libya to Europe?
We highlight the fact that it'll be very difficult for European countries to stem the flow of migrants from the Libyan coast to Europe as long as they don't work on this region, the southwest. So far, European operations and funding has mainly been directed to improving the ability of the Coast Guard in the north of the country to operate and stop the flow of migrants via sea. Europeans have also funded authorities in Niger. And we say that unless there is an economic development plan also for the south of Libya, specifically the southwest, it will be very difficult to stop the flow because the incentives are so high for local communities, especially in the border area, to work with migrants. It won't be easy because there is no international presence in the southwest of Libya. The UN and the UN Special Representative hasn't visited the southwest for years. Very few international NGOs operate there, including the International Organization for Migration, barely has a presence in the main city in the south, Sabha. And so it'll be difficult to implement projects in the south, but we say we need to start somewhere.
Does the European community have a united strategic agenda to deal with the migration problem emanating from Libya?
Unfortunately, there is no united front in Europe. Italy has taken the lead in trying to set up, you know, military operations or cooperation with security forces in Libya, but feels that other EU countries are not supporting Italy enough. And this is undermining the effectiveness of any European policy towards Libya.
Any recommendations offered by the report to handle this daunting problem, dealing with the core problems behind it?
We say that unless the international community and Libyans as well start addressing the macroeconomic problems of the country, it'll be very difficult to stem the migrant flow. There has to be dialogue between security factions in the southwest of Libya. They haven't been part of the broader security sector dialogues that have taken place between eastern factions and western factions. Also, oil companies and the Libyan National Oil Company has its also share of responsibility because the southwest of Libya is an area rich of natural resources and there is a major production of crude oil and gas going to Italy from here. But most international oil companies and the Libyan National Oil Corporation do not reach out to local communities and do not employ from the local communities. This has to change.
That was Claudia Gazzini, senior Libya analyst at the International Crisis Group. She spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 24 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Rwandans went to the polls today for the country's presidential election, and President Paul Kagame is widely expected to win. Kenya's appeals court dismisses a lawsuit that would have forced the Electoral Commission to only use an electronic voter identification system on Election Day next week, and Ethiopia's parliament lifts the state of emergency it enacted late last year. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Burundi's Senate has rejected a resolution passed by the EU Parliament on the current political situation in the country. The move comes after the EU urged the Burundi government to cooperate with the UN Commission of Inquiry to investigate human rights violations. Moses Habyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Human rights violations in Burundi are still a major concern since violent protests erupted in 2015 after the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza vied for a third term in the office. The move was seen as a violation of the country's constitution by the opposition members. Besides rejecting the EU resolution, Burundi Senate also praised the African Union's decision to reject the deployment of the peacekeeping mission without the government consent. Anicet Niyongabo is the vice chair of the Senate.
The Senate of Burundi rejects
the resolution adopted by the European Union Parliament of 6 July 2017 on the situation in Burundi and urges the stakeholders not to consider the resolution as the real situation in the country. He says that the current situation in the country is quite different from what was mentioned in the resolution. The resolution expressed the European Union's deep concern at the political and the security situation in the country. The European Parliament indicated that killings and other human rights abuses have been taking place in Burundi since 2015. It called on the government to fully cooperate with the UN Commission of Inquiry to conduct the investigation. The chairman of Burundi's National Human Rights Commission, Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza, says the judicial system is able to conduct credible investigations into the alleged crimes committed since 2015.
It is not necessary for the situation in Burundi to be dealt with through procedure being led by the International Criminal Court. It is a commission that the crimes that were allegedly committed in Burundi are not of a nature of a scale that could justify a procedure being conducted by the International Criminal Court.
Burundi opposition leader and deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, says the country is far from being stable. He says opposition leaders are harassed and sometimes arrested by the authorities. He called on the government to embrace the European Union resolution.
We are in a country where, after all, you are safe when you are in the ruling party or when you are affiliated to it, and confirming that there are plans to assassinate me. And why should I be assassinated if not just because of my political position and belief?
Burundi is now relatively stable after the violent protest in 2015 that led to more than 500 people being killed and more than 400,000 fleeing to the neighboring countries. The country is now calling on the refugees to voluntarily come home and promised to waive taxes on the transfer of their businesses back to Burundi. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two-Face. Native C. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.